You know, I was driving past this massive new apartment complex downtown the other day. You know, the kind of all glass rooftop garden, a gym that looks way nicer than my actual gym. And I just had that familiar sinking feeling, the one where you realize that unless you have a literal duffel bag stuffed with cash, or I don't know, you're related to a Rockefeller, you are completely locked out of that level of the real estate game.
It's the classic velvet rope of investing, isn't it? Real estate has, it's historically been the playground for the ultra wealthy or the big institutional giants. It's heavy, it's expensive, and the entry ticket is usually, what, six or seven figures?
Right. And for the rest of us, the accessible option is usually buying some single-family fixer-upper where you spend all your weekends arguing with contractors and just, you know, praying the basement doesn't flood at 3 in the morning.
Exactly. It's either high capital or high headache. It's an asset class that's just defined by friction. But today we're looking at something that, it claims to grease those gears pretty significantly. We are digging into a guide from Gamma Assets, and it's titled Property-Backed Tokens Explained for New Investors.
And the promise here is, I mean, it's pretty bold. It's about taking that heavy, expensive asset, that glass power downtown, and slicing it up into something digital. But, and this is the key part of our mission today, we need to strip away the hype. Because when people hear tokens or digital assets, their brain tends to short circuit a little bit.
Or it jumps straight to skepticism, which is fair, actually. Our goal is to explain the mechanics of how this really works, without drowning in all the jargon. We need to look at the money, the legal structure, and maybe most importantly, the risks.
And speaking of skepticism, let's just clear the air right away. The source material from Gamma Assets, it opens with this massive disclaimer that we really need to highlight. They are basically shouting this from the rooftops. These are not cryptocurrencies.
That is the single most important distinction to make. If you're listening to this expecting us to talk about, I don't know, the next meme coin that's going to the moon because some billionaire tweeted a picture of a dog,
You're in the wrong place.
you are definitely in the wrong place.
Which is a relief, honestly. I think we're all a little tired of that roller coaster.
Yeah, the guide really emphasizes that property-backed tokens are not speculative digital assets in that sense. They're investment instruments and they're linked directly to real estate. The token is just the delivery mechanism. It's like an envelope. The letter inside that envelope is an actual piece of property ownership.
Okay, so let's tear open that envelope. If it's not crypto, but it lives on a screen, what is a property-backed token exactly? The definition they give is a digital representation of an interest in real estate. That sounds incredibly lawyerish. Translate that for me.
Okay, think of it like a bridge between two worlds. So on the left bank, you've got the physical world, bricks, mortar, land, all the zoning permits. And on the right bank, you have a digital ledger. The token is the bridge. It represents a specific, legally defined share of ownership or economic participation in that real world asset.
So I'm not buying a token that just exists in the ether. I'm buying a token that actually points to, say, 123 Main Street.
Exactly. But here's where the structure gets interesting, and it's where a lot of people get confused. You, the investor, you don't generally hold the direct title to the building. You're not going down to the county clerk's office to scribble your name on a deed next to 5,000 other people.
Which would be a logistical nightmare. I mean, imagine trying to sell the building if you needed 5,000 signatures. Or what if you wanted to sell your tiny share? You'd have to call a lawyer just to transfer 0.01% of a deed.
It would be impossible. The friction would just eat up all the profit. So the industry uses a workaround that's actually quite standard in traditional finance. The property itself is held within a legal structure, usually a company or what's called a special purpose vehicle, an SPV.
An SPV. Yeah, we hear that term a lot in finance. So it's basically a shell company created just to hold this one asset.
Correct. The SPV buys the building. The SPV's name is on the deed. What you buy is a token that represents a share of that SPV.
I see. So it's kind of a Russian nesting doll situation. The building is inside the company, and the token is a slice of the company.
That is the perfect analogy. And because the building is wrapped inside this company structure, you can divide the ownership of the company into much, much smaller units. This is the whole fractionalization concept. And you can do all that without changing anything about how the actual building operates. The building doesn't know it's been tokenized, it's just sitting there being a building.
But for the investor, that barrier to entry just collapses. Instead of needing that duffel bag of cash for the whole thing or even a big down payment, you just need enough capital to buy one fraction of the SPV.
Right. It democratizes the access. But, and I keep coming back to this, it doesn't change the nature of the asset. And that brings us to the why. You know, why would someone do this instead of buying stocks or REITs or just gambling on crypto? The source talks a lot about intrinsic value.
Which is just a fancy way of saying it's worth something because it does something.
Exactly. A building has utility. It provides shelter. It provides workspace. It can be redeveloped. That demand creates a floor for the value. The guide points out that the value of a property-backed token isn't just based on what the next guy is willing to pay for it. That's the greater fool theory you see in crypto.
Right, where you only buy it hoping some other fool buys it from you for more later.
Here, the value is anchored by the condition of the roof, the quality of the tenants, the local jobs report, the location of the street. It's grounded in the physical reality of the economy.
That feels like a massive psychological shift from the whole crypto mindset. In crypto, or even with some tech stocks, you're often betting on the idea of future value. Here, you're betting on rent.
And that provides a volatility check. The Gamma Assets Guide explicitly contrasts this with the crypto market. Real estate values, they're generally heavy, slow-moving ships. They don't usually spike 50% overnight, but they also rarely crash 50% overnight, unless, you know, there's some catastrophic event.
So the physical asset acts like an anchor. It puts a drag on the volatility.
It moderates it. And this leads to a very practical difference in how you even track the price. If you own a stock or Bitcoin, you can refresh your app every 3 seconds and see a different number. Is it the same here?
I would assume not, right?
Yeah.
If the value is based on the building's value doesn't change every 3 seconds. It's not like the bricks are trading in real time.
Precisely. The valuation isn't based on some continuous ticker tape trading sentiment. According to the source, it relies on periodic appraisals, yield analysis, and actual income performance.
Periodic is the key word there.
It's deliberate. It happens when a professional surveyor actually goes out to assess the property, or when the rental contracts are renewed, or maybe quarterly based on net income. It's an event-based update.
I actually like that. It forces you to slow down. It seems like the structure itself is designed to discourage that day trader mentality where you're just glued to your screen, sweating over red and green candles.
It encourages an investor mindset rather than a trader mindset. You are investing in the performance of a real asset over years, not the hype of a market cycle over hours.
Okay, speaking of performance, let's talk about the part everyone really cares about, the money. So we've established these are real buildings with real tenants paying real rent. Walk me through the flow of funds. Tenant writes a check. Does that go straight into my digital wallet?
Not quite that fast. And this is where the reality of property management kicks in. The source explains that these are typically income-producing assets, yes. But before any money reaches the token holder, the building has to eat.
The building has to eat. I like that.
It does. You've got operating expenses. Insurance, property taxes, the management company's fee, landscaping, trash removal, and very importantly, maintenance reserves. You have to set money aside for when the boiler inevitably breaks in 5 years.
The unsexy stuff. The stuff that if you own the house yourself, you'd be paying out of your own bank account while, you know, crying softly.
The vital stuff. If you don't pay for those, the asset loses value. But once those expenses are covered, the net income is distributed. And here's the elegance of the token model. That distribution is automated and proportional. If you hold 1% of the tokens, the smart contract or the platform directs 1% of that net rent to you.
So it's a pass-through mechanism.
Exactly. And for the investor, it creates that mailbox money effect. You aren't answering the phone when a tenant locks themselves out, but you are getting the yield from the rent they pay.
That all sounds great, but my alarm bells are starting to ring. Whenever I hear passive income and high yield and digital innovation all in the same sentence, I start looking for the catch. And to their credit, the Gamma Assets Guide has a section literally titled Risks Specific to Property-Backed Tokens.
I really appreciate that honesty in the source material, too. They have this great line that sums it up perfectly. It says, property backing provides structure, but not immunity.
Not immunity. Okay, let's unpack that. What are we not immune to?
First and foremost, you're not immune to the property itself. If you tokenize a terrible building in a dying neighborhood, you just have a digital record of a terrible building.
Right. The blockchain doesn't fix a leaky roof.
Or a bad local economy. If a major employer leaves the town where your property is, vacancies go up, rents go down, That is a fundamental economic reality that no amount of fancy coding can bypass. You still have to do your due diligence on the real estate fundamentals. You need to look at the prospectus and ask, is this actually a good building?
So you can't just blindly buy it because it's tokenized and sounds all futuristic.
Correct. But then you have risks that are specific to the format. And the biggest one the guide highlights, and I really cannot stress this enough, is liquidity risk.
This is the one that trips people up, because we are trained to think digital equals instant.
Mm-hmm.
If I have Bitcoin, I can sell it at 3 a.m. on a Sunday. If I have a stock, I can sell it Monday morning.
And that is a really dangerous assumption to make with property tokens. The source warns pretty bluntly that these tokens may not be easily sold at short notice.
Why is that? I mean, if it's on a blockchain, shouldn't the transfer be instant?
The transaction technology is instant. You can swap the token in seconds, but the market might not be there. Who are you selling it to? Secondary markets for these tokens are still developing. There just might not be a buyer waiting at the exact moment you want to sell.
So unlike the stock market, where there's almost always a buyer if you lower the price enough, here you could actually be stuck.
You could be illiquid. You absolutely cannot treat this like a savings account that you can raid whenever you need cash for a medical emergency. Real estate is inherently an illiquid asset. Tokenization makes it more liquid than selling a whole house, which takes months and involves realtors, but it does not make it instantly liquid like cash or blue chip stocks.
This is a crucial nuance.
Yeah.
It's more liquid, not fully liquid.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have the operational and structural risk. This goes back to that SPV we talked about. Who is running it?
Yeah, because I'm not fixing the toilet, and neither are the other 500 token holders.
You are relying entirely on a management layer. You depend on the platform and the property managers to do their jobs. Are they collecting rent aggressively? Are they vetting tenants properly? Are they reporting the finances accurately?
And if they aren't?
Then your returns suffer. And in a worst case scenario, the asset itself suffers. The source mentions that the legal framework here is vital. If the paperwork connecting the token to the SPV is weak, or if the SPV isn't set up correctly to protect the asset from the platform's own bankruptcy, you could be in a lot of trouble.
That's a terrifying thought. So if the platform goes bust, say the website just shuts down,
yeah,
you want to make sure your building doesn't go bust with it.
Precisely. You want what's called bankruptcy remoteness. The guide emphasizes this heavily. The token represents the asset, not the platform. But you need to trust that the legal plumbing is watertight so that if the tech company fails, you still own your slice of the building.
And finally, there's timing risk.
Yeah.
Which I think connects back to the valuation stuff we were talking about.
It does. Real estate operates on a different clock. It takes time to stabilize, time to appreciate. If you buy a token for a building that's being renovated, you might not see a dime of income for a year.
You're on property time, not crypto time.
And property time is slow. If you are impatient, this is likely a huge mismatch for your portfolio.
So knowing all these risks and the potential upside, let's look at this specific case study mentioned in the source, Gamma Assets. How are they navigating this minefield?
Well, what stands out with Gamma Assets is their focus on compliance and what they call boring structure. They seem very, very aware of the Wild West reputation of digital assets, and they are actively moving in the opposite direction.
They explicitly mention using legally recognized structures.
Yes, they aren't trying to reinvent property law or, you know, create some new unregulated loophole. They are using established frameworks, likely existing securities laws and property trust laws, where tokens represent defined economic interests.
It sounds like they're trying to make the asset boring, even if the delivery is novel. Like, look, here's a standard real estate deal, we just put it in a digital wrapper.
That's a great way to put it. Their goal, according to the text, is to align digital efficiency with real-world property fundamentals. They want transparency. They want the investor to be able to see the direct line between the token price and the building's income.
And why is that transparency so critical for them?
Trust. If you can't verify the income, or if the valuation feels arbitrary, serious investors are just going to walk away. By tying everything to verifiable data rent rolls, appraisals, maintenance reports, they are trying to legitimize the space. They want to show that the price isn't magic. It's math.
It's almost like they're saying, look, the tech is cool, but the tech isn't the product. The real estate is the product.
Exactly. The tech is just the pipe. The water flowing through the pipe is the rental income. If the pipe is shiny, but there's no water, it's useless.
That is a solid analogy. So if we zoom out and summarize this for the listener who's maybe thinking about diversifying, we've gone from what is a token to how do I get paid,
mm-hmm,
to what happens if the market crashes? What's the final verdict here?
I think the summary is that property-backed tokens are a modernized entrance to a very old room. They combine the fundamentals of bricks and mortar rent, value appreciation, tangible assets, with the accessibility mechanics of digital finance.
So it allows you to play the game without buying the whole stadium.
That's right. But, and this is the final takeaway, while the format is digital, the rules of the game have not changed. Patience, due diligence, and a focus on income. These are non-negotiables. You cannot hack the fundamentals just because you put them on a blockchain. If you buy a bad asset digitally, it's still just a bad asset.
You know, this whole conversation makes me think about where we are heading. We're seeing the slicing up of everything. You can buy a slice of a painting, a slice of a classic car, and now a slice of an office building.
It's the financialization of everything. Everything becomes a tradable asset.
Right.
Okay.
And here's a thought to leave you with, listener.
Yeah.
As we move toward this world where real estate can be sliced up into these tiny digital pieces and traded by anyone with a smartphone, does that blur the line between being an investor and being a landlord?
That's a deep question.
And does it actually make the property market more democratic, giving everyone a seat at the table? Or does it just make it vastly more complex, adding layers of management and tech and fees between us and the actual land? Does access equal empowerment or just more middlemen?
It's the difference between owning a home and owning a derivative of a home. It's certainly something to chew on.
Something to think about while you're looking at the real estate listings, or maybe the token listings, this weekend. Thanks for diving in with us.
A pleasure, as always.
We'll catch you on the next deep dive.